No.
بعد وقت 10 دقائق راح السلام عليكم. ورقة الغياب اللي كان حاضر في المحاضرات السابقة يوقع أمام اسمه كذا مرة على عدد المرات اللي كان حاضر فيها، واللي يعرف التاريخ مع المحاضرة، أول محاضرة كانت يوم 4/10 في أول يوم داومتم، واللي بعدها تعاونوا عليها انتخاب التاريخ. نعم
ثمانية.
أوكي اللي يعرف التاريخ يسجلوه. الثالثة 13 مكتوب التاريخ. يا ريت التسلسل. يا أخي ابدأ حتى نبدأ. As usual, I used to remind the students with what we were talking about in the last session. In the last session, we were talking about the headache. You remember that? And we classified the causes of headache as intracranial and extracranial. Among the structures inside the cranial vault that might cause pain are the meninges, bravo, blood vessels, venous sinuses, thank you so much, and the temporium. Very good, very good. These are the painful structures inside the cranial vault, so that they might cause pain. And the pain is described as intracranial. Where is this pain felt? It is referred to the surface of the head. Those above the tentorium, the pain will be referred to the anterior surface of the head. And those below the tentorium, the pain will be referred to the occiput, to the posterior part of the head. What about the extracranial pain? What sensitive structures outside cranium? The eyes, bravo. What else? The nasal sinuses, number two, number three. The muscles of the head, very good. Muscles, when they are set into spasm, they are painful. So these are the sites or the causes of pain outside the cranial vault. It remains something to talk about a special type of headache, and that is migraine. What's migraine? Oh, bravo. Shakika. So the headache of migraine is a special type of headache. Unfortunately, ladies affected much more than gentles with this type of headache. And it is precipitated by certain factors. I'm going to tell you about them. This headache, always, there is a positive family history. There should be more than one person in the family affected by this special type of headache, which is migraine. This is number one. So you have to ask about family history. Is there any other subject in the family having the same complaint? Number one. Number two, the attack of headache is preceded by a duration which we call as aura. This duration might last for 30 minutes up to 1 hour. During this period, there might be nausea, visual hallucinations, as loss of vision in part of the visual field. You know what's visual field? You are looking at me now, but you don't see me only. You see the whiteboard, the other things behind. All what you see in front of you is the visual field. So this patient with migraine headache might lose vision in part of the visual field, or sometimes might perceive a flashing light here and there. Nausea, loss of vision in part of the visual field, lighting lights and so forth. These are called as prodromal symptoms. Prodromal means أولي. Prodromal symptoms, العلامات الأولية that precede the attack of headache. How long it takes? 30 minutes up to 1 hour. So that the patient, unfortunately, will have an idea that he might complain of migraine headache after within 1 hour. After 30 minutes, probably to 1 hour. The exact mechanism of migraine headache is unknown. Nobody knows the exact mechanism. But among the postulations, among the hypotheses that are provided to explain the mechanism of migraine headache is one that is most accepted. According to this hypothesis, migraine is due to an abnormal vascular phenomenon. During the attack, there will be an abnormal conditions in the blood vessels, even those that supply the brain, along with the extracranial blood vessels. As a result of a prolonged emotional state, abnormal emotional condition, that you unfortunately, and I'm very sad to say that, that usually ladies complain of, they will develop a state of vascular constriction, constriction of the blood vessels, or we call it vasoconstriction. As a result of this vasoconstriction, what will happen to the blood supply, to the structures? The blood supply will be diminished. It will reduce. And this hypothesis, because it provides explanation for the prodromal symptoms, that is why I describe it as the most accepted. Because when the blood supply to the brain is decreased, this might explain the abnormal visual hallucinations or abnormal sensory hallucinations sometimes, okay, and nausea. This is the only hypothesis that can explain the prodromal symptoms because of the diminished blood supply to the brain. After a while, because of the continuous vasoconstriction, the blood vessel wall would be exhausted. It will tire. It will fatigue. As a result of this exhaustion of the blood vessel wall, the blood vessel wall will be flaccid, will relax. In this condition, the pressure of blood pressure, I mean, the blood pressure inside these flaccid blood vessels will push the blood vessel wall, will stretch it. This stretching is painful. That's why the pain of migraine headache is throbbing and pulsating. When you ask the patient, can you describe the headache you complain of? He'll tell you that it is pulsating. It's a throbbing. Due to what? Due to relaxation and the flaccidity of the blood vessel wall, so that the pressure inside these blood vessels will stretch over the blood vessel wall. We have to start now discussing the motor system. As you remember probably in a previous session, that almost all of our daily activities are responses to what? To sensory stimuli. You might be exposed to a question. So this is a sensory stimulus.
through audition, you will get the stimulus and start responding, as what happens now. I'm asking you, and you start replying. You start your answers. You might be exposed to something unpleasant, so you try to avoid this unpleasant stimulus. So your movement to get away from the unpleasant stimulus is a response. So all of our daily activities are responses to a sensory stimuli. These responses in the form of motor activities, either to move part of the body, to move the hand or the leg or the head, or to remove the whole body away from the stimulus. Again, as I have told you, that along the central nervous system, the functions are integrated at different levels, not only with the sensory sensation, but even with the motor. Again, in the motor system, the functions are integrated and processed at these different levels, starting from the spinal cord, brainstem, and the higher brain. So what could be the role of the spinal cord? Let us start with the spinal cord. What is the role of the spinal cord in controlling our bodily activities? We have discussed previously the spinal cord as a tract passing from the periphery to the brain higher up. In the meantime, it passes the signals, the commands, rising from the brain to the periphery. So it is bidirectional pathway. But never believe that it is a simple conduit. What's conduit? Conduit tube, better than conduit. The spinal cord is not a simple tube for the signals to pass from the periphery to the center and from the center to the periphery. Why? Because it contains millions of neurons arranged in groups, in pools of neurons. These pools, neuronal pools, has got some integrative function to produce a certain activity. But we described the functions integrated at the level of the spinal cord as very simple. You remember that. What do we classify these as? What? Reflexes, you remember. Because they are very simple, I mean the functions integrated at the level of the spinal cord, because they are very simple, they are functionless, they are purposeless, they are jerky, we classify them as reflexes. It takes automatically, without thinking about it, does not need. So the functions, the motor functions, integrated at the level of the spinal cord are described as reflexes. This is a cross-section of the spinal cord. It is thrown into two main areas, the gray and the gray matter and the white matter. What does the gray matter contain? contains the cells. The cells that are gray in color. That's why it's called as gray matter. So this area is the gray matter because it contains the gray neurons, the gray cell bodies. Whereas the white matter and the surrounding contains the nerve fibers that are white in color. The gray matter, as you can see, is capital letter shape. Suppose that this is the posterior part and this is the anterior of the spinal cord. Those parts projecting anteriorly are called as the anterior horns. And those on the posterior aspect, the posterior horns. It remains, what about these two horns? From the shape, it looks like they are located midway between the anterior and posterior, and laterally. So, is it possible to call them as anterolateral horns? This is the name. This is how we call the anatomical structures. So this is the anterolateral horn on both sides, the posterior horns, the anterior horns. In the spinal cord, especially in the gray matter, there are the neurons. The neurons are classified into many types. Number one, motor neurons. The motor neurons are present on the anterior horn. So the motor neurons are present where in the spinal cord? In the anterior horns. The motor neurons are again of more than one type. The largest of these anterior motor neurons are called as alpha motor neurons. These alpha motor neurons are large in size, and they provide innervation to the, to which part? To the skeletal muscles. The alpha motor neurons will send their nerve fibers to the skeletal muscles. Along with these alpha motor neurons, there are smaller in size. About one half the size of the alpha motor neurons. This second type is called as gamma motor neurons. So the motor neurons are of two types, alpha motor neurons that will send their nerve fibers to the skeletal muscles. What about the gamma motor neurons that are smaller, one half the size of the alpha motor neurons? These are again motor, but innervate what kind of structures? Inside the muscles, there are structures that are described as muscle spindles. These are, I'm going to talk about these muscle spindles in a moment, but these muscle spindles are innervated by these gamma motor neurons. Let me stop at this level to explain what is the significance of this information. Each muscle, skeletal muscle, consists of two types of muscle fibers. The large muscle fibers that make the belly of the muscle, which when contract, the muscle shortens, as well as a small, very short, 3 millimeters long modified muscle fibers. These are unusual muscle fibers. They are modified. These are the muscle fibers inside the muscle spindle. We magnify this very small structure into this. The muscle fibers are modified. They contain no contractile elements at their central part, so they cannot contract. The contractile elements in the form of actin and myosin, if you remember that from your muscle study, are present only at the terminal parts. The contractile elements in the form of actin and myosin are present only on the terminal parts of these fibers. So the terminal parts are only capable of contracting. When the terminal parts contract, what will happen to the central portion? It will be stretched. The central portion will be stretched as a result of contraction of these terminal parts. As you can see that the central portion is surrounded by nerve fibers, spiral nerve fibers. As a result of stretching of the central part, surrounded by these nerve fibers, the nerve fiber will be disturbed. It will be distorted in this case. This distortion of the nerve fiber will excite the nerve fiber, will initiate an action potential that will be transmitted along the nerve fibers to the spinal cord. This is the principle of action of the muscle with the muscle spindles. Back to the types of neurons in the spinal cord. Along with the alpha motor neurons, gamma motor neurons, there are other types of neurons. These other types apart from the alpha and gamma motor neurons, there are small, very small neurons spread in between or among the alpha and gamma motor neurons. We call these neurons as interneurons. They are very small. There are so many, about 30 times the number of the motor neurons, both alpha and gamma. What for are these interneurons? These are the neuronal pools that exhibit the integrative function, that exhibit the processing function, the integration of the sensory, the signals that descend, the orders, rather, that descend from the brain to the periphery. Before it goes out of the spinal cord, they will be processed, integrated in these neuronal pools that consist of these very small interneurons. A fourth type, the third was interneurons. The fourth type of neurons in the spinal cord is a special type of neurons, which are called in honor of the neuroanatomist who first described these neurons, who was Renshaw. They are called in honor of his name, Renshaw cells. What are these Renshaw cells? Sometimes while reading, in order to see the word, you have to pass through all of the letters of the word. Am I right? In order to differentiate between in and is, you have to see both letters. What is the distance between these two letters? What is the size of each letter? Very small. So, can now you expect the range of movement of the eyes to move from the I to the N, to discriminate that this is N and not is? Very, very small movement. Very, very small. So, in such a condition, to execute such a small movement, again, what do you expect? That the muscle will contract as a whole or only a few fibers? If the whole muscle contracts, the movement will, the eye will deviate probably to the other side. So in this case, you need only a few fibers to contract. What will provide this activity? When the command descends from the brain to the spinal cord, to the alpha motor neurons of the eyes, these alpha motor neurons would send their axons to the muscle of the eye. After the action of the alpha motor neuron emerges from the cell body, from the stroma, it will send a small collateral that in turn terminates on a small interneuron. This interneuron, in turn, will terminate on the knife o-ring, on the adjacent alpha motor neuron. Suppose that these two alpha motor neurons will provide motor supply to this muscle of the eye on the lateral side, for instance. We don't need both alpha motor neurons to be excited simultaneously at the same time. So what happens that when this motor neuron is activated through this collateral, through this small collateral that will terminate on this small interneuron, it will inhibit the neighboring motor neuron. In this case, what do you expect this little interneuron to be excitatory or inhibitory? Inhibitory. Sure, bravo. You are awake. So this little interneuron is inhibitory through this inhibitory interneuron that will terminate into the neighboring alpha motor neuron. The neighboring alpha motor neuron will be inhibited, and only few muscle fibers will be excited at a time to induce the very, very little movement of the eye. Is this clear? With pleasure. In order to achieve a very fine movement, as in the case of movement of the eye, in the previous example, you have to excite only few muscle fibers. To use just few muscle fibers, probably sometimes two or three muscle fibers, to provide this very little movement. In this case, you need just one alpha motor neuron to be in action. And in order to achieve that, this mechanism will provide this inhibition of the neighboring alpha motor neuron. When this is excited, it's set into action through a small recurrent projection, we call it collateral, that terminates on a small inhibitory interneuron. It will inhibit the neighboring cells so that all of the surrounding cells will be inhibited and only one will be set into action to provide this very little movement. What about the fourth type? Nobody asked about it. This is what we call as the Renshaw cell, which is inhibitory in nature and is present in this location of the spinal cord and achieve this function to inhibit the neighboring interneuron. If you move higher up to the brainstem, what do you expect that functions integrated at the level of this, the brainstem would be more complex? Sure. Thank you so much. So that the functions integrated at the level of the spinal cord are very simple. They are reflexes. They are functionless. They are purposeless. They are jerky. Whereas those integrated at the level of the brainstem, they are more complex. Anybody can provide an example of the motor activities integrated at the level of the brainstem that is beyond our control? Remember that. The movements that are under our control are those originating or arising from the cerebral cortex, from the brain, and only brain. What about the heart movements? Is it under your control? About respiratory movements, the gastrointestinal tract movements, the blood vessels, all of these functions are integrated at the level of the brainstem and they are beyond our control. They are much more complex. The respiratory movements and the contractions of the heart are not reflexive. again, moving higher up to the higher brain, the cerebral cortex. At this level, a much more complex patterns of movements would be executed. Like what? Writing, putting your notes now. You are using high skill to put your notes. This is a complex pattern of movement. Okay. For instance, to comb the hair. Again, this is a complex pattern of movement. It is executed by the cerebral cortex. It cannot be executed by this, the spinal cord or the brainstem. So this is the difference between the activities integrated at the level of the spinal cord, brainstem, and higher brain. Where from in the brain is the origin of the commands to the muscles? You remember in a previous session, I have put a figure. What is the structure in the middle? Yeah, it is the central sulcus. The central sulcus dividing the cerebrum into two halves, anterior and posterior. Immediately behind the central sulcus, the convolution immediately behind it is the somatosensory problem. Is the somatosensory area. The convolution in front, immediately in front is the motor cortex. Is the motor cortex. The motor cortex is again in a similar way to the sensory cortex is not simple. It is drawn into three areas. The area immediately in front is the primary motor cortex. It is given the number 4, according to Brodmann's classification. Brodmann is a neuroanatomist who have classified the areas of the cerebral cortex and given it numbers. He gave this area number 4 to indicate that this is the primary motor cortex. When you hear primary, there should be secondary. The secondary area starts from, this is the sylebius fissure. You haven't had your neuroanatomy up to now. This fissure is called as the sylebian, again in honor of the neuroanatomist. The secondary motor cortex starts laterally from the sylebian fissure, going upside, up to the top of the cerebral cortex. This is the secondary. A third area, it's called as supplementary. Area 3 of the motor cortex is the supplementary area. This area is mainly present in the longitudinal fissure between the two cerebral hemispheres, mainly. But it extends to the top of the cerebral cortex to occupy this part. Now, why there are three areas for motor control? Isn't it enough to have just one? Sure, it is not enough. The primary motor area is responsible for sending commands to execute the very fine and discrete movements of the distal parts of the body, including the hands and fingers, as in the case of, for instance, playing piano. This is a very fine movement, very discrete movement. an alternative. There is an alternating activity between the different fingers. So this is the responsibility of the primary motor cortex. What about the secondary motor cortex? In this area, the programming of the movement. Before you do anything, you have to put a program in the mind. I'm going to do so and so. And you have to imagine an image for this activity. This image is drawn by the anterior part of the secondary motor area. Then it is pushed to the posterior part of the secondary motor cortex. The image will be pushed to the posterior part. What for? To put the program. Which muscle will contract first? Which muscle will contract will be the next? And so forth. After that, the commands will not be sent directly to the primary motor cortex. Why? Because it's still not reached the final form. The program needs to be revised. Exactly the same as what happens with the computers. So the program put by the secondary motor cortex, starting from the anterior part, to imagine an image of the movement. Then this image will be pushed back to the same area to produce what? To put a program. This program needs to be revised. What will revise this program before it is delivered to the primary motor cortex? It will be sent deep in the brain to the basal ganglia structure inside the brain, deeply located, called as basal ganglia. These basal ganglia will interpret or check the program, whether it is suitable or not. Then after that, from the basal ganglia, it will be delivered to the thalamus, another structure. From the thalamus, it will be sent back to the final relay station, the primary motor cortex, that will send it to the executors, to the muscles. I repeat that because I'm sure that at least some of you don't get the point. Probably you have been taught in a previous study that our movements are very simple. Unfortunately, once upon a time, I was listening to one of the teachers of physiology in one of the colleges. He was talking about muscle activity to the students. And he told them that our movements are tetanus, a sort of tetanus, unfortunately, which is a disaster to describe our movements as tetanus. You know what's tetanus? تتمس اللي يصاب به الأطفال حديثي الولادة عندما يقطع الحبل السري بحاجة وسخة. شو صار بالطفل؟ تتمس means maintained and forceful contractions of the muscles that if it affects the respiratory muscles, the newborn will pass. And when an adult man is injured by a dirty object, again, he might develop tetanus. That's why when anybody is exposed to injury in the outpatients, they first give him an injection against tetanus. This is not our subject, but our movements are highly complex. Highly complicated task. It is executed through this process. from the secondary motor cortex, the idea develops. I'm going to do so and so. I'm going to put my note on my notebook. Okay? So you have to imagine the movement. Okay. This image will be sent to the posterior part of the secondary motor cortex. What for? To put them the program. So you might call it as a programmer of the motor cortex. Then from this area, the program needs to be checked. Where to be checked? Deep in the brain. In which structure? The basal ganglia. The thalamus. Then to be sent back to the secondary or primary? To the primary. Good. You are awake. I'm very happy with that. And from the primary motor cortex, it will be sent to the executors, to the muscles, to do the task. What about the supplementary, the third motor area? This area seems to be, I mean the functions of this area, seems to be rudimentary. I'm against this belief totally. أنا ضد هذا الاعتقاد بشكل كامل 100%. لأن لا يوجد شيء اسمه بقايا والذي يؤمن بالبقايا لا تنطبق إلا عليه. According to my philosophy, and we have been created as human beings from the beginning, from the very beginning. How can a man accept that his previous resources are monkeys? You accept it? Nobody accept it. Nobody accept it. والذي يقبل هذا البليف هذا المعتقد والله لا ينطبق إلا عليه. بشر الله خلقنا بشر وهذا خلقنا من أول حد الآن. أما داروين يعتقد أن أجداده كانوا قرود يخلي بالعافية عليك أجدادك قرود أجدادك تماسيح whatever. So this area we know very little about it. We know very little. All what we know is that if you stimulate in this area, the response to this stimulation will be bilateral movements. And different with the primary and secondary. The primary and secondary areas will produce unilateral movement. A movement of a certain muscle or group of muscles. But stimulation in the supplementary area will produce bilateral movements. هذا الله وهذا خلقه كما يقول المصريين. أعتقد بعد ما ضجتم ولا تكتم اليوم يسعدني جدا أنهم متفتحين. All of you are awake. نحتاج بريك شوية دقيقتين. Thank you.
Thank you.
what could be the significance of getting such an information in the form of muscle spindles inside the muscle belly? What's the importance of these structures? Everything we study should have some importance in clinical practice, especially because you are going to be doctors. So what could be the use of this information in clinical practice? This structure we call as muscle spindle represents the receptor, the sensor of the muscle. It senses what? It senses any change in muscle length. When this length of the muscle is changed, whether shortening or elongation, the muscle spindle will detect this change in muscle length. So you might call it as receptor to detect the muscle change. What for detecting the muscle change? Probably some of you at least have seen the doctor examining any patient, but during examining the patient, he will examine for the reflexes. Have you seen the hammer, the medical hammer? Yeah, have you one?
See.
Yeah. موجود عندك?
Yeah.
ما موجود. المجال أيضا لا يسمح نجيب واحد نعمل reflexes لأنه ما شاء الله المكان ضيق. So the importance of studying this structure in the form of muscle spindle is its clinical application. Its application in clinical practice. During examining the muscle reflexes, the doctor uses the medical hammer. At least some of you have one, probably. When you tap on the muscle, either on the muscle belly or on the tendon of that muscle, as in the case of the, for instance, the quadriceps muscle. The quadriceps muscle will terminate with the tendon passing over the patella, and the insertion will be on the upper end of the tibia. You have studied that? Very good. So when you tap on the tendon of the quadriceps muscle, this will stretch the quadriceps. When the whole muscle is stretched, what about these internal structures? They will be stretched too. In this case, when the muscle spindles are stretched, through these sensory fibers, they will send the information to the spinal cord. Where in the spinal cord? To the same alpha motor neuron that innervates the straight muscle. Muscle stretching will excite these receptors. Receptors will send information to the spinal cord, to the same alpha motor neuron that innervates the muscle. What would happen? The sensory information will excite the alpha motor neuron so that the muscle will contract, will shorten in response to the stretching. So this receptor is designed to detect any change in muscle length and to correct the change, to put it back to its normal length. And this is exactly what happens when you practice examining the reflexes. What for is this examination? The doctor examined the reflexes to check for the tract mediating the reflex. What is this tract? It consists of the receptor itself, number one. The afferent nerve fiber,
number two, the integrating center, the center of integration, integrating center in the spinal cord, number three, and the response through the efferent fiber, number four, and the muscle itself, the executor, number five. So that these are the five elements of the muscle stretch reflex. What are they? Again, the receptor, number one, the afferent fiber passing from the periphery to the central nervous system is called as afferent, number two, an integrating center in the central nervous system, number three, number four is the pathway mediating the response. This pathway from the central nervous system to the periphery is called as efferent. Afferent A or efferent E. Same spelling. This is number four. And number five is the muscle itself, the executor of the contraction. This is not the only receptor in the muscle that is designed to detect any change in muscle length and to correct it, to put it back. At least some of you, when observing a championship of weightlifting, رياضة يلعب هذه الرياضة؟ أحد يلعب هذه الرياضة؟ من الجنتلز. دول الرباعين أهل الأثقال. أحيانا يشيل وزن، يرفع وزن ثقيل أكثر من طاقته. فعندما يرفع الوزن فوق الرأس يحصل غير تحمل عقباه، إما أن يسقط الوزن على رأسه يا لطيف ويقتل فورا، أو يسقط على الظهر ويقطع، يصير عنده كسر في العمود الفقري ويقطع الحبل الشوكي وخلل وشلل طرف سفلى أو رباعي ربما إذا كان في الرقبة، المشكلة عويصة. ما الذي يجعل الوزن هذا يسقط من يد الرياضي؟ راح نشوف. Each muscle, you know that I'm sure, terminates with a tendon. One at the insertion, one at the origin of the muscle. Inside these tendons, there is another structure which is called as Golgi tendon organ. Golgi, the name of the anatomist who find it first. Golgi tendon organ is present in the tendon from the neck. It acts as a receptor, as a sensor. It is designed to detect what? It is designed to detect change in the tension inside the muscle when the muscle contracts. Any muscle when contracts, there will be a tension, it will become solid. Not as in a relaxed muscle that feels lax. You can palpate your biceps muscle. When it is relaxed, it feels lax and flaccid. But when slightly contracting, it feels solid, hard. This is a tension built in the muscle after contraction. So this receptor is designed to detect change in the tension in the muscle. It will do what? After the tension built in the muscle will be so severe, the muscle might be torn, or the tendon might be avulsed from its bony attachment. ولكن عظمة الله سبحانه وتعالى أكبر بكثير من أن يحصل مثل هذا الديزاستر. واحد يرفع ثقل وتنقطع العضلة أو تنسلخ عن العظم من الانسرشن، ما ممكن. فوضع هذا الستركتر Golgi tendon organ to guard against these abnormal conditions in the muscle. Torsion
or avulsion from exponent aspect.
So when the tension inside the muscle goes higher up, becomes very severe and dangerous, this receptor will detect this high tension and sends information to the alpha motor neuron that innervates the same muscle, but it does not terminate directly on the muscle. It terminates on a small motor neuron. Now, by logic, what do you expect? This small interneuron in between the alpha motor neuron and the afferent fiber coming from the Golgi tendon organ, would it be excitatory or inhibitory? By logic, what do you expect? A muscle contracting forcefully and powerfully. The tension inside the muscle goes up and it threatens the muscle, that the muscle might be torn or avulsed. The Golgi tendon organ sends the information to the spinal cord. The alpha motor neuron will be excited to increase the contraction or inhibit. Sure. Sure, logically, biologically, this muscle must be inhibited to prevent torsion. And this is exactly what happens in the mirfa al-rabba' thiqal akthar min taqtu. Yasqut unwillingly. Bidun rabitu. La yurid an yakhsar al-mubarat. Yurid an yafuz. Walakin no. Shay kharij beyond his control. Tension built in the muscles so high, the Golgi tendon organ will inhibit the alpha motor neuron so that the muscles will relax and the height will fall. Okay. These are the two types of receptors inside the muscle. The muscle spindle that detects change in muscle length and corrects it back, and the Golgi tendon organ, the muscle tendon, that detects changes in the tension of the muscle and correct it back to prevent hazards in the muscle. Examples about the motor activities integrated at the level of the spinal cord, because you are going to examine, to practice these skills when you will be a doctor, inshallah, in a couple of years. Among the examples of these muscle movements integrated at the level of the spinal cord, we describe them collectively as reflexes. Reflexes are called after the structure, either biceps reflex, triceps reflex, brachioradialis reflex, or in the lower limbs, knee jerk or knee reflex, or ankle reflex. These are all reflexes that you might practice examining them in a couple of years, inshallah. Apart from these reflexes, sometimes you might be exposed to some injurious stimulus. What will happen in this case? You have to move away from the injurious stimulus. What we call this type of reflex, again, this is a reflex act, takes place automatically. You are withdrawing the hand from the painful or injurious stimulus. So this is another type of reflexes integrated again at the level of the spinal cord. We call them as withdrawal reflexes, to withdraw the limb or the whole body from a painful or harmful stimulus. Sometimes the response might be so severe because the stimulus is powerful and strong stimulus, inducing severe pain. In this case, you will move rapidly to avoid the injurious stimulus, painful. In this case, the whole body will be moved away from the stimulus, not only the affected limb. In this case, the opposite side of the body have to support the body against the gravity, because you might fall to the ground. In this case, there should be some information passing from the painful organ, the organ affected, say the hand, to the other side, to the opposite side of the spinal cord, to set the muscles against gravity into action, so that this type of reflex, we might call it as crossed extensor. In order to support the body against gravity, you have to the extensor muscles set into action, not the flexors. Because if the flexors, we will fall down. Am I right? How you can stand up from sitting through the extensor muscles of the legs? So this is the third type of reflexes integrated at the level of the spinal cord, which is called as the crossed extensor reflex. In this case, how many types of reflexes integrated at the level of the spinal cord? Number one, the muscle stretch reflex. When you tap on the muscle, belly, or the tendon with the medical hammer, you are stretching the muscle. That's why you call it muscle stretch reflex. The response will be contraction of the muscle to correct the change. Number two, the withdrawal effect. Number three, the crossed extensor reflex. How can the brainstem control some of our bodily activities? Through two main groups of nuclei in the brainstem. Brainstem. The brainstem includes the bones, medulla, and the mesencephalon higher up. In the brainstem, there are two groups of nuclei. The first is present in the upper part of the medulla, which are called medullary.
medullary reticular nuclei. And another group of nuclei that are present at the level of the pons. Pontine reticular and nuclei. Still, there is another group of nuclei present in the brainstem. The vestibular nuclei. Through these three groups of nuclei in the brainstem participate in the control of our bodily activities. What's the function of each group of these three groups? The medullary reticular nuclei are inhibitory, so that you might put negative sign. To indicate that they are inhibitory. I'm standing now. If I want to sit down, my extensors need to be excited or inhibited. They are now excited to extend the knee joint. That's why I'm standing. So if I want to sit down, these excitatory the muscles, the extensor muscles, need to be inhibited. Shift from the standing to the sitting position. This activity is initiated by this group of nuclei, the medullary reticular nuclei, that send inhibitory signals to the muscles that will perform the function of sitting down. What about the pontine reticular nuclei? الضد دائما دائما هناك الضد في كل الكون. So what do you expect the pontine reticular nuclei to be? Inhibitory also or excitatory? Excitatory or inhibitory? الأخيرين شو ما تشاركون inhibitory أيضا. You are out of the coverage. The pontine reticular nuclei have exactly the opposite function of the medullary reticular nuclei. They are excitatory. They are excitatory. I'm sitting now. So if I want to stand up, so my anti-gravity muscles, the extensors of the lower limbs, need to be excited now. So what brings this activity into action? These nuclei, they will send excitatory signals to the anti-gravity muscles so that I'll stand up. Okay. Sometimes, while you are walking around, you might be exposed to something, and as a result, you might slip. As a result, the normal posture of the body will be disturbed, and the balance will be disturbed in this case. As a result, you might fall down, but this will only rarely happen. Why? Because of the activity of another group of muscles. What are these groups? The vestibular. From the name, vestibular, these nuclei are related to which structure? The vestibular structure. Where is this vestibular structure? In the inner ears. خذوها في الإعدادية أظن. الأذن الداخلية. القنوات الهلالية تذكروها ولا نسيتوها؟ ما نسيتوها أنا متأكد تذكروها كلكم. This is the vestibular system of the body.
which maintains our equilibrium. So when the body leans to one side, these semicircular nuclei and channels, these semicircular canals inside the inner ear will send an information to the brain. To which part of the brain? To the vestibular nuclei, carrying the same name. That the body now is leaning to the right side, for instance. As a result, these nuclei will send, in turn, excitatory signals to which part? To the medullary or to the pontine? Pontine. Who say pontine? Who say medullary?
Pontine.
Medullary. Medullary? Hardlock. Hardlock to the pontine. To the pontine. In order to maintain balance, when the body leans, in order to maintain balance of the body, my left extensors need to be excited. Otherwise, you might fall down. So, in this case, the signals will be passed to a selective group of muscles through the excitation of the vestibular nuclei. The activity of these nuclei will send selective signals to a specific group of muscles. I don't need the extensors of the upper arm in case of leaning. What do you need is the excitation of the anti-gravity muscles of the lower limbs, so that this selection of excitation is induced by the vestibular nuclei. Through these three groups of nuclei, our body posture is maintained, our equilibrium is maintained, and our movement shift from sitting to standing to lying supine are all executed. The last thing to talk about, we have spoken about the spinal cord, the brainstem, the cerebral cortex, and the areas of the cerebral cortex that are related to motor activity. It remains to answer a question, and that is, how the signals arising from the motor cortex arrive to the executors, to the muscles. There should be some pathways. In the same way that the sensory signals from the periphery are relayed to the brain, there should be an opposite pathway mediating these commands arising from the motor cortex to the muscles. This pathway is called as the cortico-spinal tract. From the origin, the cortex, to the insertion, to the end of the spinal cord, so it is called as the corticospinal tract. Sometimes you might call it as pyramidal. Pyramid. What's pyramid? Pyramid. This tract arises from the motor cortex, passing, descending down. I'm sorry. Through its way descending down, it will pass through a structure. We call it as internal capsule. This internal capsule has got a V shape with anterior limb and posterior limb. It is located horizontally in the brain like this. Through the posterior limb, the corticospinal or pyramidal tract passes. Through which limb? The posterior of the internal capsule. Descending deep in the brain to the medulla oblongata. In the medulla oblongata, because it was wide at the level of the cerebral cortex, and the medulla oblongata is narrow, so that these fibers will gather together in this way, similar to what? That's why it's called as pyramidal tract, corticospinal or pyramidal tract. At the upper level of the medulla oblongata, the fibers of the corticospinal tract will cross to the other side. That's why the left side of the brain controls muscles on the right side. And the opposite is true. But not all of the fibers will cross to the other side. Some of the fibers that are only few will descend ipsilaterally on the same side of origin. They descend without crossing until a lower level than the medulla oblongata, they will eventually cross to the other side. Is this the only tract, the only pathway mediating the motor commands from the cerebral cortex, the motor cortex, to the muscles, to the spinal cord? Of course, number one, and then to the muscles. Or there is an alternative. There is an alternative. Apart from the corticospinal tract, there is another tract which acts as a spare. When the corticospinal tract is damaged, this spare tract will take over the jaw. What is this second tract, the spare tract? It passes through a structure which is called as the red nucleus. The red nucleus is a structure inside the brain through which fibers passing from the cerebral cortex, the motor cortex, to the red nucleus, and from the red nucleus to the spinal cord. This tract is called as corticorubrospinal. Corticorubrospinal. So we have two tracts mediating the motor commands from the motor cortex to the spinal cord. The main is the corticospinal or the pyramidal. An alternative is a pathway passing through this structure, which we call the red nucleus. As a result, the tract can be called as the corticorubrospinal. What is the significance of this information? If a patient is exposed to injury to the brain, and this injury damages the corticospinal tract, but it does not affect the corticorubrospinal tract, what do you expect? That the movements will be lost completely or partially? And what kind of movements will be conserved? Number one, whether the movements will be lost completely or not. Good. The movements will not be lost totally. What kinds of movements will be lost and others conserved? The corticospinal tract arising from mainly from the primary motor cortex. This area is responsible for what? The discrete the fine movements of the distal parts of the body, the hands and the fingers, so that in this case, with an injury to the corticospinal tract, these fine movements will be lost. But the gross movements will be maintained, will be conserved. Okay? This is because of the spare tract. This is the corticorubrospinal tract. Because it is not affected, it will execute the gross movements only. But the fine movements, the discrete movements, as a result of damage of the corticospinal, they will be lost.